Liz Winstead has always looked at life a little differently. As a little girl growing up in Minnesota, she was often abraded for asking impertinent questions and saying something inappropriate. This served her well when she became a comedian. She's written a book of essays called Liz Free or Die that takes readers through the different chapters of her life, growing up, becoming a comic, helping to create The Daily Show back in 1996. She also was involved in the creation of Air America. In the book, Winstead has an easygoing, engaging style, whether she's writing about her attempts to become the state's first female altar boy or how she helped discover Rachel Maddow. Liz Winstead will be at the Rensselaerville Festival of Writers on Saturday night at 8:30 to read from and sign her book, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Liz Winstead back to the roundtable this morning. Liz, thank you very much for joining us once again. I appreciate it.
Hi, thank you so much.
Well, I really, you know, the last time you were with us, and I told the story early on, we got about 10 minutes into the interview, and we had to go, and, well, we hadn't talked about anything. We left all this stuff on the table, and I said, well, you're coming back, and you were nice enough to come and join us once again, and, of course, you're going to be speaking at the Rensselaerville Festival of Writers, which is this Saturday. Do you enjoy events like this? Are they fun?
Oh, my God, they're so fun. And I just want to back up for 5 seconds and say I was so bummed, too, that I had to hang up so quickly. But those radio junkets they put you on, it's like speed dating for your book. So we couldn't really have a meaty conversation, and we were having so much fun, and then they whisk you off. So thank you for having me back.
Well, it's just great to have you back.
And to answer your question, the festivals are about the best thing about writing a book, because you get to spend a weekend with people who love to read and who love books and who love to just support all of it. And so it's really, it's an incredible thing to talk to people. And to also, when you're mired in writing a book, which I kind of went into isolation and learned about a writing process that I was not familiar with at all for myself, what was amazing was how, you know, you just remove yourself from the process of reading about other books or knowing about other books. And so you get to go to these festivals and talk to people about what I should read next and what I should do next. And that part of it is really exciting too. And to meet other authors and just talk about process and what they went through and really getting tips on how to stay focused when you are trying to write a book.
At what point did you say figure out that writing and at least humor was going to be a part of your life, the comedy would be your calling?
You know, the thing is about it is I am not one of those people. And when you read like Tina Fey's book or you read Rachel Dratch's book, the one thing one of the things that separates us is they had a real knowledge that they wanted to, you know, be in comedy and be funny early on. I really didn't have that. For me, I was simply on a quest to find a place where I could have a voice and actually complete sentences that would go uninterrupted. And so for me, you know, in looking for that voice, I'm the youngest of 5 kids in a Catholic family. You know, there was just all sorts of strikes against me into like having my voice be heard. And so my first thought was, oh, priest. You know, I'd go to church every Sunday and I'd see that priest up on the altar. And it was like, wow, even when that guy's boring, people go up and tell him how interesting he is. Maybe I want that job. And then, of course, we all know that didn't work out so well and it still hasn't for the ladies. So it was, I'd always been was a little bit observational and kind of wisecracky. I think that's in the DNA of my family. And so, you know, when we were at parties or I would, you know, always sort of comment on the world in groups. And I ended up holding court a lot with groups of people. You know, I was at ease with sort of telling jokes or retelling stories. And so one night, it was just simple. We were watching TV with a girlfriend of mine, and George Carlin was on the Tonight Show. And, you know, I've seen a million comedians on late night TV, but it was mostly kind of, you know, back in the late 70s and early 70s. You know, it was kind of guys in ties. I didn't really see a woman 23 years old on the Tonight Show telling jokes. And so it was like, well, I don't even know if I can do that. You know, do women even do that? You know, I thought, oh, is it like the priesthood again? And so when I just was like, well, I certainly can try. And so off I went to a comedy club about 6 months later with a bunch of horribly crafted pieces of comedy that I spit out. But I got just enough laughs to make me want to do it again. And that is where it's like crack. Because it's like, oh, I have to do it again then, because this was really fun. And then you do it again, and I bombed my second time. So then I was like, well, I was kind of good the first time. I bombed the second time. So I got to try it a third time to see if, you know, to see how it averages out. And then that one landed somewhere in the middle. And before you know it, I've been doing it 28 years, still trying to decide whether or not I'm funny enough to be a comedian.
What is it like that first time going out? Because the great thing about comedy, I mean, the great thing, and by that I mean the most horrible thing, is that you don't, there is no net. It's just you. And it's you and the material and the audience. You have to present it. So, but without any confidence in the material and not knowing how it's going to fly and just having a couple friends saying that you're funny, it seems to me that it takes an incredible amount of guts to take those steps, to walk out and pick up that microphone and start.
Well, I think that if you knew how terrifying it was really going to feel when you set foot on stage for that first time, you would never do it. I think the absence of that fear is what gets you up there the first time. And I think also what gets you up there the first time is when you go see people. Like, before I set foot on stage, I decided, because, you know, I'm a big thinker, but I would go watch some stand-up comedy live to see what it was like. And so I went on a Saturday night where it was, like, packed full of people, and there was a dynamic that was really amazing, and it was all of these people smoking and drinking and single-focused on this person who was on stage with simply just a microphone, and they would have opinions on religion and sex and relationships, and I was like, oh, my God, this is so riveting. I want to be part of that. Cut to amateur night, which is a very different vibe, right? Where you walk in and there's probably 30 people who are all friends of the acts. And the vibe is more like when you watch a baby take its first steps and you don't want it to fall and you're rooting for the baby. And it's like, oh my God, this is, please don't have them fail. Please don't have them fail. And you're on stage thinking, I can't see anything in front of me. It's pitch black. I have a microphone. The only way I know people are even out there is if I make them react to something I say. And so the adrenaline really fuels you. And I think that your first time, that adrenaline gets you through it. And I have never really seen first-timers totally bomb. I don't know if that's some kind of divine intervention that keeps people going to let them figure out whether or not they're good enough to keep doing this. But it is that energy of a first time almost gets somebody to do it for a second time. I've never really talked to anybody who hasn't tried comedy a couple of times. And so it's really quite magical, you know. And the thing for me is it really felt like once I tried it, I don't know, it sort of changed everything. It gave me a focus. It gave me I think I want to do this. I think this is something I want to hone and at least explore to a point where I figure out whether or not I can devote my life to this.
Liz Winstead's new book is Liz Free or Die. It is published by Riverhead. She'll be at the Rensselaerville Festival of Writers on Saturday night at 8:30. We will talk more with Liz Winstead and talk about the Air America years after this short break. The very funny Liz Winstead is our guest. Her book, Liz Free or Die, she'll be at the Rensselaerville Festival of Writers Saturday night at 8:30. We talked last time you were here about The Daily Show and your creation of that. And when we ran out of time, we were just about to start talking about Air America. This, of course, was Al Franken's attempt at creating a voice for liberal and progressives. And it was something that you were very much a part of. How did you get involved in it?
Well, what happened was, and it's pretty hilarious, you know, there's an interesting thing that I write a lot about in my book, which is after 9/11, for the political satirist, it was sort of the doors all just shut. And if you were not already working basically on The Daily Show or Colbert, actually Colbert wasn't even around at that point. It was just The Daily Show and Bill Maher. I mean, Colbert was on The Daily Show, but the Colbert Report had not started. It was pretty hard. The pitches about political satire or taking on the government or anything like that were just unwelcome. It's like, nope, we are out of that business. And so I was in L.A. and just had finished up a horrific spring break show for MTV to pay the bills, to with which my every feminist card that I carry for every organization, probably I should be thrown out. Let's just put it that way. I got a call from a guy named John Sinton who said, "Hi, I got your number from Al Franken, and we're together launching a progressive radio network, and we're looking for a Liz Winstead type." And I was like, I'm not sure. I didn't realize I had a type. And then I was like, wait, why don't you want Liz Winstead? What is it about her that you want someone sort of like her? Liz Winstead asked. And then I was sort of freaked out. So then I was like kind of insulted for a minute as he was describing this radio network, saying, you know, they wanted to combine humor and speak truth to power, and they wanted to, you know, throw out 18 hours of original programming and get it going and really combat, you know, right-wing radio, because in talk radio, the disparity between right-wing talk and progressive talk is in the 90s of right-wing versus in the single digits of anything that's progressive or left-leaning. And so I was like, oh my God, I'd never worked in radio, but I'd love to. And again, I said, what about Liz Winstead instead of a Liz Winstead type? And he said, okay, you're kidding. And I think that he just thought that I didn't want to leave television and that I wouldn't want to work in radio. But I love a medium. And as you know from doing radio, it's I think maybe my favorite thing to do, because you develop such a relationship with your listeners. You know, it really does become a very personal dialogue, and that's something that I really love about it. And so to be able to create programming with broadcasters and comedians who I knew really loved communicating with people and really wanted to get another point of view out there in the world, it was just the luckiest thing in the world.
I thought it was interesting in its development, because Al Franken, of course, a comedian, and you, a comedian, but then the other voices were more, you had the broadcasters, and you look at somebody like Rachel Maddow, who comes into this really as a broadcaster.
Yeah, well, the funny thing was, Rachel was somebody who was on a radio show in Western Massachusetts, in Northampton. And she had got her radio gig because she won a contest.
Yeah.
So she was working as an AIDS activist, and she was doing odd jobs. She had just finished her PhD, and she's a Rhodes Scholar, so she had just come back from that trying to figure out what she was going to do. I didn't know her at the time. She was friends of a friend of mine, and she had been desperately sending her demo reel to anybody who would listen to it before I had come onto the team to develop shows. And so I got a call from a friend of mine saying, hey, I know this woman up here who's really good. Would you ever listen to her demo reel? And as you know, when you are in a position of hiring people in the entertainment industry, every friend of yours has a friend who's really talented. And I had gotten about a bazillion requests like that from friends, and I had listened to them all, and 80% of them were just awful. And so I love my friend Paul, so I was like, okay, I'll listen to it. And I put it, you know, into my computer, and it was Rachel. And it was like, oh my God, this woman's fantastic. So we called her up and said, can you come down and talk to us? And she was on a bus that 5 minutes after we had called her, and came down that afternoon, and we all fell in love with her. And she ended up co-hosting with Chuck D and myself on the Mid-Morning Show, and went on to become Rachel Maddow, one of my favorite broadcasters around.
and of course, I want to talk about her for 1 second, and then in our final moments, talk to you about what happened to Air America. But I mean, smarts win out, right? I mean, she is so good because she is so damn smart.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of really smart people who don't cut through. I think that she's so good because she's so smart, but I also think she's so good because she knows how to communicate her brilliance in a way that is palatable and engaging to people who may never have heard this before. She knows how to tell a story. She is of humor. She is somebody who you believe really cares. And she really is thoughtful in the communication of what she knows, because she knows how much she knows. And then she also knows, how do I impart this in a way that is digestible and interesting and compelling? And she is painstaking at making sure that her messaging is something that you want to come back to and that you want to hear. And that's the thing I really love about her.
In the, you know, we so often hear about the liberal media. So why could a network that was decidedly and deliberately liberal not make it?
Well, I mean, the short story about Air America is, you know, when you look at Fox News, you see that they spent 15 years of being in debt before they started making a profit. You know, people were willing to invest in the message over and allowing it to grow so that it could become a money-making operation. But with Air America, you know, our two investors, the big investors at the beginning, were people who were not honest about the money they had. And so we found ourselves in a giant financial hole that was almost impossible to get out of. You know, when you look at the talent that came out of Air America versus just the sheer financial ridiculousness, you know, Marc Maron has the number one podcast and now has a TV show on IFC. You have Rachel Maddow, who is, you know, Rachel Maddow. You have Al Franken, the senator. You have Sam Cedar, who has an incredible radio show and podcast. You know, a lot of talented people came out of that first incarnation of Air America, and it's not that people didn't want the message, it's that the message wasn't funded properly to be able to sustain it and help it grow.
Well, Liz Winstead's new book is Liz Free or Die. The book is published by Riverhead. She's going to be at the Rensselaerville Festival of Writers on Saturday night at 8:30 to read from and sign her book. And you can find out more information by going to festivalofwriters.org, festivalofwriters.org. Liz Winstead, we can't wait to have you in the region. And thank you so much for joining us once again this morning.
Well, I'm so glad you have me, and hopefully you'll be able to come to the reading so we can meet.
Yeah, I can't actually come this weekend, but I did with the people you're staying with. I left my book, so I'm hoping you can sign it for me.
I certainly will.
Excellent, Liz, you're a delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate
okay,
it. Again, Liz Winstead. Find out more at festivalofwriters.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.